Hello, hello everyone. Kim Jean here with you, and welcome to In Practopia, that people, places, things Caribbean show. Boy, am I glad you're here with me today, because we're doing the first in the two-part series on languages of the Caribbean, and this week we're talking about the Creole language. Jodia nou ka pale a sou langaj Creole, sa se langaj ki ka pale a Karaibla, ek mwen bien kontan ou kay tan li jodia. And I'm very glad you're here for it. Today on the show, my guests, I have two guests today. I'm so happy about that. Talking about the Creole language. Very interesting conversation about the history, what we need to do to keep the language alive, and also touching on Creole as part of the culture and a way of life for people who speak it and practice the Creole traditions. My guests are Kentrija Pierre out of St. Lucia and Sylvia Henderson Mitchell from London, and both in their own way are doing very good work in keeping the language alive, spreading it, and doing their bit as writers on the Creole language. We also have Did You Know? And we will end the show with Ode to the Caribbean quote and the announcement of next week's guest. So, let's get started. Anuale. Let me remind you that In Practopia is available for download on the website at www.inpractopia.com and also on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And please check out the website. We have interesting stuff like Be My Guest and also Island Shotlight. We'd love for you to come, send us comments, and follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook. Now it's time for Did You Know? 5 Things About the Creole Language. 1. Creole is also called French Creole, Creole, Patois, and Creole. 2. That more than 9 million people around the world speak the language. 3. The name French Creole also refers to people, that is, the French and their descendants. 4. That Creole or Patois is spoken also in Trinidad and Venezuela. And 5. That the Creole alphabet contains 2-letter phonics sounds like CH, DJ, NG, ON, OU, and TJ. And now, my conversation with Kentrija Pierre out of St. Lucia and Sylvia Henderson Mitchell from London on the language that is Creole.
There are lots and lots of theories and so on in terms of how it actually started. However, it is generally accepted that it started out of the coming together of peoples of different cultures on the island. And when I say peoples of different cultures, of course, I'm speaking specifically of the African people who were brought to the island, and of course the European people and the indigenous people who were located on island. So it is the coming together of those people and the need for them to communicate with a medium that was understandable to them all that led actually to the creation of the language. That is the generally accepted explanation for the development of the language.
Okay. Sylvia, you're talking out of London. Do you know a different historical beginning of the language?
That's basically my understanding of it as well. The coming together of the different people and the need to communicate with one another out of a particular difficult contact situation.
Okay. Is it a case where it actually started that people had a common understanding of how to communicate in the 15 or 1600s?
I think probably more in the 16, 1700s. That's my understanding of it.
Kentry?
Yeah, because essentially it would be a very long process. Of course, you know, in terms of language development, in terms of the use of of mother tongues and the development of pidgins and so on, and then this evolution into Creoles and all of that. It takes quite a bit of time. So, as to whether it's the 1500s or the 1600s and so on, it's a matter of conjecture and stuff, but it would take some time for an actual language to evolve in the way that it did.
And now that we're in the 21st century, Creole is widely recognized, and the two of you are doing your work to make it even more widely accepted, more widely appreciated, and embraced. There's something that I've been thinking about, even when I was growing up, that, you know, people of a certain standing in society or a certain class, if we want to use that terminology, did not really use the language. It was frowned upon. Do you think that it was more of a socioeconomic thing, the language of Creole, in terms of where it was spoken and who spoke it?
Well, I think we have to understand that the European people spoke their language, and the indigenous Amerindian people spoke their language, and the African people spoke their own language and stuff. But for the Africans, you didn't have a single language, because the people of Africa were coming from all different parts of Africa and so on. So you didn't have a single language. So in a sense, the European people who were the colonizers in that sense, they attempted to really impose their language on the people, you know. As the colonizing power there, they were saying, hey, you need to speak my language because that is the language. And so if you read from, say, for example, Henry Breen, who was a European himself, visiting the Caribbean and experiencing the people and so on, he referred to the language as a language for toothless old women, you know. So it was frowned upon by the colonizers, frowned upon by the Europeans and so on. And because of the fact that the African people and the Amerindian people under domination and so on, they were made to believe that it was the culture of the colonizer that was the prestigious culture. And so it was the culture that they needed to adopt and embrace. So in a sense, you know, the colonizers, as I said, frowned upon the Creole language that had developed among the people, particularly among the African people and so on. Yes, so it was so that the Creole language was a language of predominantly the colonized people.
Wow. Sophia, what was your experience being exposed to Creole when you were growing up, and how did you see other people feeling about it?
I grew up mainly in England, mm-hmm. and my experience was that most parents tried to keep it away from their children because they did see it as holding you back. If you didn't speak the Queen's English perfectly, you were going to be held back. So they tried their best to keep it away from the children. And even, you know, aunts, uncles, people like that, you know, it became a bit like a secret language here because all the adults were trying to keep it away from the children. Some parents wouldn't even speak it in the house with their friends. If their children were present, they, you know, send them away upstairs to their room or something like that. So a lot of the parents that came over here in the 50s and 60s, they tried as much as possible to keep it away from their children. You have lots of children here. Well, I say children, I mean people my age who grew up here. They don't understand the language or even speak.
You know, when I was growing up, we grew up in a working class family. And these were terms that we used to describe our socioeconomic status. And we spoke it at home. It was just something you grew up with. But when I got into secondary school, I found I had a lot of classmates who didn't speak it. Because yes, really and truly, the emphasis was on speaking the Queen's English. And Creole was seen as a second language, not something of significance, so not many people spoke it. But now I'm finding that people are embracing it even more. So Kentry, a lot of work I know has been done into making the language official. Can you share with us when that happened?
Well, yeah, quite a lot of work has been done in terms of changing the status of the language. Of course, the work in St. Lucia was, well, more or less undertaken primarily by the Folk Research Center in St. Lucia. And of course, if you know St. Lucia well, you'll realize that we celebrate annually Journée Creole, where a lot of effort is placed on encouraging people to accept not just the language, but very, very importantly, the culture, the Creole culture, because it is the culture that sustains the language. And the Folk Research Center has done quite a bit of work in terms of actually promoting the culture to sustain the language. Fortunately for us in St. Lucia, the head of state, who is Dimplet Luizi. She has been, you know, a fighter as far as the Creole language is concerned. She has been a defender of the Creole language. And what has happened is that since she got in office and under the administration of Dr. Kenny Anthony, you have had a situation where the legislation was changed to allow for the use of the Creole language in Parliament. And so very, very frequently, the Governor General, in addressing the Parliament, would do so in both languages. So you have a kind of bilingual approach to her presentations in the Parliament. And of course, the parliamentarians are also allowed to use the language in Parliament. So you had that kind of change happening. And of course, you have had greater acceptance of the language over the years, which gives it a certain level of acceptability that definitely was not there, you know, in the past.
Wonderful. And, you know, I want to bring up the idea of Creole as a Romance language. I actually came across the term Romance language from a Romanian friend of mine who asked me about my background, and I told him I speak two languages, English and Creole, and he said, oh, a Romance language. So I ran to look up what a Romance language is. There is justification for calling Creole a Romance language because it almost stems directly from French, which is a Romance language. A Romance language is a direct off-breed of Latin. So the Romance languages are French, Italian, Portuguese, Spanish, Romanian, and Catalan. It has been said that languages that are an offshoot of a Romance language, by extension, can be called a Romance language. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on it, what you think about Creole possibly being referred to as a Romance language.
Well, I think it certainly qualifies as a Romance language for all the reasons you've just stated. I had a quick look to see what kind of languages are Romance language, and it certainly has Latin derivation. So yes, you can say it qualifies to be a Romance language.
When you look at the lexicon of the language, the vocabulary and so on, you have a very, very close relationship to the French language, and of course the English language in some cases as well. But the structure of the language, I would think, is more predominantly African. You know, and so if one considers the strong lexical connection to the French language, perhaps it can be, of course, described as being that Romance language.
What about the priority of the language among people who speak it and the work both of you are doing to promote the language? Are you finding that people are more appreciative of it? People are more enthusiastic about learning it in terms of speaking and wanting to learn to write it as well? Sylvia, I know you've been doing quite a bit in London. How do you think people are responding to it in terms of its priority?
People are responding very well to it, but I think a lot of people are thinking, oh, it's going to be hard. It takes a lot of time. You know, is it really useful? You know, a lot of people would rather go and learn German or Chinese and things like that. So some people need convincing. Other people, you know, they're glad to see that they can learn Creole and it's not as hard as they think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's going well.
And Kendra, in St. Lucia, even before I came to the States, I know we had reached a point where the introduction of it, learning to speak it, learning the alphabet, and learning to write it, there was some work being done on that. How has the priority in terms of how people favor the language improved since then?
Right now, I think there is a rush to embrace the language big time, you know. There's that rush to embrace the language big time because, in a sense, you're going to be left behind if you don't embrace the language. How do you as a politician connect, for example, connect with people if you don't speak the language that they speak? How to connect with people in church if you don't speak the language that they speak? So it has become almost, it has become imperative that people, you know, embrace the language and use the language for survival purposes. We have developed a little orthography.
Mm-hmm.
I have offered a couple of books myself, mm-hmm. written in the Creole language. I'm currently working on a storybook written in the Creole language. In Martinique and Guadeloupe, for example, you mm-hmm. have quite a few publications in the Creole language. You have some writers, some world-renowned writers, like Patrick Chamoiseau and Raphael Confiant, who are doing quite a bit of work using the Creole orthography. And of course, in Haiti as well, you have quite a bit of work coming out of Haiti using the Creole orthography and so on. So that there has been a wide embrace of the language by people because they need it to survive, and although I believe that people have not learned to write Creole as well as I would have liked them to, but work continues apace to ensure that happens.
Yeah, and Sylvia's in England doing her bit as well. She's authored a book, Quelle Dominique, for beginners. It's good that you're mentioning the orthography and a commonality in how the language is being used. Sylvia, can you tell me what your experience was? You have that British accent, you were born there, but you embrace the language, you're an advocate for it. You actually wrote a book for beginners. What was that process like for you?
Well, I started that process. We were doing some classes with the Dominica Overseas Nationals Association, but there's a lack of materials. There aren't any books over here, no classes. So I put all the notes together, obviously using the orthography that, after a while, I decided to turn that into a book, expand on it and turn it into a book, because we really don't have anything over here.
I wanted to talk about the reach of the Creole language. The Caribbean is doing its bit. Everywhere people speak the language, and even in Europe, that's being embraced as well. So I think that maybe both of you would agree that the language has come a long way, and it's making its mark in the world. What else do you think needs to be done to make the language even more worldwide, more accepted, more embraced, or even seen as a necessary language for, like Kentry said, survival, or to even be able to expand your language count?
Well, I think in Dominica, I'm not sure about what's going on in St. Lucia at the moment, but in Dominica, it would be good, even essential, for them to have it in schools, taught in schools, even as an option. That's not available at the moment in schools. I think that's essential. They've been discussing it for a long while, but as yet, nothing has happened on that score.
Yeah, I know that was being discussed in St. Lucia as well. Kentry, what are your thoughts in terms of what needs to be done to make the language move forward, even in a way that you would like to see it move forward?
It's like identity issues, or it's a matter of who we are. And like I said earlier on, if the Creole culture remains, then the language will survive. There's absolutely no question about that. You know, and as I said, more and more people are in fact realizing that in order to keep together, in order to understand each other, in order to connect with each other, they need, of course, to use the language effectively.
People are embracing the Creole culture, definitely, but I don't think they're embracing the language enough. I mean, when you have June Creole, everybody comes out with their clothing and the national dress and Creole food and so on. But the majority of people are still not speaking it. So they are embracing the culture, but they're a bit slow to embrace the language, I find.
Kenji, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, the most significant thing is moving the language from being an informal language into a situation where it becomes a formal language. Because as it is right now, when you go to the communities and so on, people speak the language, and the language, I think, is more widely spoken now than it was before, you know? But it's a question of where exactly do you speak it, and where exactly does it get embraced and so on. So that the person who is in court, for example, on a murder charge, fighting for his life, doesn't have the luxury of the use of the language in his defense. And that kind of situation, a real troubling situation. But on the streets and in the communities and so on, I think it's okay there. It's a question of moving from the informal to the formal. That's where the problem lies, really.
I hadn't thought about that, Kenshi, but you're correct. You're right about that. In terms of, becoming more formal and people are embracing it even more, is there still more that needs to be done to make it formal in a sense that people from all spheres of society can use the language where it needs to be done and use it effectively so that people can communicate and understand it properly? And how long do you think it will take for us to get to that point where the language is formalized?
Well, a very deliberate effort must be made by the political directorate to develop the legislative framework within which that could, in fact, happen. You know, as I said, in St. Lucia, for example, whereas the legislation allows for the use of the language in the parliament, for example, you have to make a point in English, and then you could expand in Creole, but to make the point in Creole and expand in English. I don't even understand what I'm saying there.
I do.
And of course, because of the fact that the majority of people can't write the language, then it means that even in Hansard, in the recorder of the parliament, for example, I might speak for 15 minutes, but it is not recorded. So 10 years down the road, when you are going through the Hansard, there will be no record of what I said in Creole. And that's because the clerk of parliament doesn't have the capacity to write in the orthography. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have those types of issues that have to be tackled very quickly in order for the language then to evolve into the realm of formality, so to speak.
Wonderful. So on an ending note, Sylvia, moving forward, how do you see the language advancing in terms of its popularity and for people to be able to communicate effectively with it?
I agree with much of what Kentry said, but I think literacy is definitely very important because it's not going to be taken as seriously as other languages unless people are also literate in the language. So obviously it's good more people are speaking it, but they need to be able to read and write it as well for recording, as Kentry said, in Parliament and so on. It's definitely necessary.
Okay, Kentry, your last thoughts?
Well, I agree with Sylvia fully. The literacy component, that is what is necessary to facilitate that transition that I'm speaking about. Mm-hmm. If people are not literate in the language, if people can read and write the language, then in a sense, you are restricted. You are restricted. And we have to remove that restriction of illiteracy, to so speak, to allow the language to really flourish in the way that we would like it to.
After I had turned off the recorder, Kentry said, "Lord Fua, Nukainipu Palia Kweol." Next time, we'll have to do the interview in Kweol. And I'm thinking, that's going to be quite a task with the English translations. Maybe next time. But wasn't that wonderful? I'm feeling so good about the future of Kweol, and hopefully it can be formalized and literacy level can be up very soon. If you're interested, there are lots of social groups, lots of websites from Dominica, St. Lucia, that are dedicated to sharing how the language is used, how to speak it, how to write it. So if you want to add to your language count, Kweol is as good a language as any. Our Ode to the Caribbean quote comes from Dame Paulette Louise, Governor General of St. Lucia and founding member of Mouvement Kweol Setlisi. And she said this on the publication of the St. Lucian Kweol Dictionary. Frank's Dictionary of St. Lucian Kweol is a most timely contribution to the ongoing efforts to promote the use and acceptance of our Kweol language. It sets us firmly on the road to reclaiming our own voices and to documenting those to all for the free contestation of both our languages in our present-day society and to ensure that our historical memory is preserved in its entirety. I couldn't agree more. Well, thank you so much for joining me. That's our show for today. Next week, it is the second part in our Languages of the Caribbean series, and this time it's on the Garifuna language. It's something that I had no knowledge of more than 4 years ago, so it's something that I know you will learn a lot from, as I did. So please come back for that next week. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at InPractopia, and I'll be right here next time in Practopia.